It's a global supply chain crisis. Containers loaded imports that have been at the terminals 9 days or longer.
Supply chain issues continue. It's Thursday, December 2nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, searching for a cure for AIDS, examining the Islamic State's origins, protecting migrating birds, lost shipwreck science expedition, electric bicycles unclogging roads. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Supply chain snarls continue to delay imports from Asia, and those delays are mirrored for exporters shipping goods to Asia. T.T. Tran reports from Southern California.
The Port of Long Beach and Port of Los Angeles are the two largest container ports in the United States. Supply chain disruptions caused by COVID-19 and rebounding consumer demand mean there are more goods coming into the U.S. than this port can handle. Even operating close to 24/7, there are sometimes more than 70 ships at anchor waiting to be unloaded.
It's a global supply chain crisis. Containers loaded imports that have been at the terminals 9 days or longer. We have a real capacity issue. It's not just a carrier issue. It's an issue involving all stakeholders, you know, the truckers, the warehouses, port authorities, of course, and marine terminal operators.
The port's problems ripple far inland to California farms that ship products to Asian consumers.
Once we fell behind on the port, then it's all been a snowball effect.
Jasmine Vineyards grows 12 varieties of table grapes, one of the state's top agricultural exports. Of the 10 biggest markets for California table grapes, 6 are in Asia. Before pandemic, Jasmine Vineyard shipped 300 to 350 grape fuel containers a year to Asia during July to October harvest. This year, the vineyard shipped less than 10% of that. For each container not shipped, the vineyard loses $45,000 in profits. Katsurayama figures that $15 to $20 million lost to pandemic-related logistics problems this year. Part of the challenge for exporters is meeting demand. Consumers shop online 24/7, but producers can't produce 24/7, and few links in the supply chain operate round the clock. Titi Chan for VOA News.
Find more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. Naval forces from the U.S., Australia, Canada, Germany, and Japan concluded a 10-day military drill in the Philippine Sea off the southern coast of Japan Tuesday, with analysts saying the threat posed by China in the Indo-Pacific region has increased the importance of the military exercises. The Japan Maritime Self-Defense Force ran the naval exercise known as Annual X 2021. A total of 34 warships from the five countries conducted a 10-day exercise, demonstrating the importance of collaborating on missions, including maritime interdiction maneuvers. U.S. 7th Fleet Commander Vice Admiral Carl Thomas.
We try to deter aggression from some of these nations that are showing the burgeoning strength that maybe we had experienced in the past. It is our operations, it is exercises like Annual X, where we can demonstrate our capability to tell these nations that maybe today is not the day.
Increasing pressure by China on Taiwan is causing concern in both Japan and the United States. Earlier this year, China accused the U.S. fleet operating in the South China Sea of increasing regional security risks, misunderstandings, misjudgments, and accidents at sea. Washington does not recognize Beijing's claim to virtually all of the South China Sea, an area of strategic competition between the two nations. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Despite variants, Singapore's COVID-19 strategy on track. U.S. and South Korea updating war plans for North Korea. Unique effort reopens girls' schools in an Afghan province. Taliban demand unfreezing Afghan assets in positive talks with the U.S. Experts say China's stance in Indo-Pacific added realism to five-nation naval drill. Find complete coverage on all these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia on this Thursday. On December 1st, many mark World AIDS Day to show support for those living with HIV and to commemorate those who have died from an AIDS-related illness. Treatments have come a long way for those infected with HIV, but a cure is still elusive. VOA's Laurel Bowman has our story.
Globally, around 38 million people are living with HIV. Since the virus was identified in 1984, more than 36 million people have died of HIV or AIDS-related illnesses. Each year on December 1st, World AIDS Day, many reflect on the fight against one of history's most destructive pandemics. Dr. Chloe Orkin has long studied HIV and is a professor at Queen Mary University of London.
The state of affairs globally is very much a situation of the haves and the have-nots. For those people who live in places where treatment is not free, or in situations where the treatments are still very old, treatments with lots of side effects, people don't do so well. And without treatment, HIV remains a disease that people die of.
Experts say that effective treatment prevents HIV-infected people from transmitting the virus. They also say that worldwide, more than 50% of those living with HIV are women, and that 1.3 million women with HIV will become pregnant. Effective treatment can prevent transmission of the virus to the unborn child. Britain's Dr. Orkin led a global effort to develop the first long-acting HIV treatment. She says that treatments such as injectables taken once every 2 months are available.
But where I live, it could amount to 6 treatment days a year for someone with HIV. And that's very different from having to take treatment 365 days a year. So it's a real breakthrough.
U.S. researchers are chasing a cure by studying HIV patients whose immune systems fight HIV without medication. In Boston, Dr. Bruce Walker is a physician and scientist who has studied HIV patients for 4 decades.
Some people are able to keep HIV in check with their own immune systems, and that really set us off in the direction of trying to understand how that was possible.
Lorene Willenberg is one such patient. She was diagnosed as HIV positive in 1992, but has never been symptomatic.
29 and a half years, I have never needed to take HIV medications. I'm humbled. I'm grateful.
Dr. Walker and his colleagues at the Ragon Institute do think it will be possible to one day cure those infected with HIV.
Our goal is to train their immune system to develop this kind of super function that we see in some rare individuals to actually be able to ideally cure them of their HIV infection, or at the very least, be able to keep the virus so under control that it can't cause any disease in the person and that it can't be transmitted to somebody else.
But World AIDS Day reminds us that HIV hasn't gone away. With funding and attention now focused on the COVID-19 pandemic, testing for HIV is down and trials have been disrupted, developments that are worrying HIV specialists and those with the disease. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Still to come on VOA Asia, investigating the roots of the Islamic State terror group. Happening now in Asia, thousands of demonstrators continue to protest in Bangladesh, demanding that the government allow ailing former Prime Minister Khaled Zia, arch-rival of Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina, to fly abroad for medical treatment. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Continuing now with VOA Asia, the Islamic State has affiliates throughout Southeast Asia, mainly in Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines. The rise and fall of the Islamic State's self-styled caliphate were preceded by several factors that contributed to the emergence of the terror group. VOA's Sirwan Kejo reports on the Islamic State's roots in Iraq and Syria.
In June 2014, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, then leader of the Islamic State group, declared its so-called caliphate from this mosque in the Iraqi city Mosul. The declaration came after rapid advances against Iraqi security forces in parts of north and west of Iraq. Prior to that, IS militants had taken over major cities in eastern Syria, including Raqqa, which was the group's de facto capital in Syria. In the years following the U.S. war on Iraq in 2003, corruption, political instability, and sectarian tensions between Shia and Sunni Muslims challenged Iraq's government. These factors, coupled with a complicated civil war in Syria, contributed to the emergence of IS, analysts say.
There was, of course, the security vacuum, the lack of professionalism amongst the security forces, also this rapid corruption within the military apparatus and the security apparatus in Iraq. So all of that led to circumstances that any kind of armed group, not even necessarily a group like ISIS or the Islamic State or the groups that were prior to the Islamic State, like Jihad with Tawheed and other groups, and Al-Qaeda in general, any armed groups, basically any gang even, would their ideal circumstances for them to operate.
In a conflict-ridden country like Iraq, experts say corruption doesn't only damage the economy. Rather, it's a matter of national security because it allows for a terrorist group like IS to emerge and grow rich on the one hand.
On the other, corruption also delegitimizes the government, the security forces, creates grievances with the local community, and therefore the local government and the local security forces lose legitimacy in the eyes of the citizenry.
U.S.-backed forces in Iraq and Syria have recaptured nearly all the territory once controlled by IS, including both Mosul and Raqqa. Al-Baghdadi was killed in a U.S. strike in 2019, and thousands of IS fighters are now in the custody of U.S. partners in Iraq and Syria. However, since its official military defeat in March 2018, the militant group remains active by waging deadly attacks in both countries. Experts say if the same conditions that led to the rise of IS in 2014 are met again, the extremist group could reemerge.
The main lesson from ISIS, both its emergence and its defeat, is to not allow for such vacuum to ever exist again and to maintain the pressure on ISIS for them to never be able to recuperate to the degree where they are able to capitalize on such vacuums that conflicts, both political conflicts, economic conflict, perhaps ethnic and sectarian tensions, would create in both Syria and Iraq.
Some argue those conditions are still present, with instability continuing in Iraq and no end in sight for Syria's civil war. Sirwan Kejo, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, U.S. President Joe Biden's top Pacific envoy accused China of waging economic warfare on Australia through a barrage of sanctions. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. It's bird migration season in the skies over Israel, one of the world's busiest migration routes connecting Europe, Asia, and Africa. Each autumn, about 500 million birds fly over Israel from the north in order to spend the winter months in Africa. The migration poses challenges to the Israeli Air Force, which trains in the same narrow corridor as the migrating birds. Linda Gradstein reports.
Hundreds of migrating birds fly past the full moon rising over the Chula Lake in the Galilee region of Israel. They will rest on the lake for the night before continuing their journey from Europe to the warmer climate of Africa.
Israel is like a funnel that funnels all this migration from Eastern Europe and Western Asia all the way to Africa. And we see here some 500 million birds every migration season.
The migration timing and routes are being affected by climate change, an issue that scientists say must be addressed for the survival of these birds.
They are the clock of Mother Earth. They know exactly when they should come. And what we see in the recent decades is that this clock of Mother Nature starts a little bit, you know, to fall apart. Because of changes, because of climate change, because of other things, because we don't keep this route of good habitats, of good fueling stations for these birds.
Besides climate change, Israel must deal with the challenge of migrating birds sharing a narrow airspace with the very active Israeli Air Force. Devastating collisions between birds and fighter jets led ornithologist Yossi Leshem to conduct studies together with the Air Force to find solutions to the problem.
Before we started our joint study, the Israeli Air Force lost 11 aircraft, combat aircraft, in which collision with birds totally crashed. Three pilots were killed. We succeeded to reduce the collision with birds by 76%.
Leshem flew with the birds in motorized gliders in order to provide the Israeli Air Force with exact maps of their migration patterns. These maps were used to coordinate training flight schedules and routes to avoid collisions. Leshem and the Air Force have continued to monitor the birds with radar stations, drones, GPS tracking devices attached to the flocks, and even volunteer spotters situated around Israel during migration season. And for a few months each season, Israelis have a chance to see the amazing spectacle of hundreds of millions of birds in the skies. Linda Gradstein for VOA News at the Chula Lake in northern Israel.
Making headlines in Asia, a 69-year-old man was rescued at sea off southern Japan after spending 22 hours on his capsized boat on Sunday. Video recorded by the Japanese Coast Guard showed the man clinging to the boat as rescuers saved him. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for listening to VOA Asia. An expedition to find lost shipwrecks on Australia's Great Barrier Reef is underway. The voyage is part of the Great Reef Census, one of the world's largest marine citizen science projects. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Conservationists estimate there are up to 900 shipwrecks on the Great Barrier Reef, but only 150 have been found. Shallow water in some parts of the reef off northeastern Australia and the region's susceptibility to storms and cyclones have made seafaring perilous. Volunteers discovered three shipwrecks last year while surveying the world's largest coral system. The expedition, which ends December 1, is returning to five reefs and the Great Detached Reef, remote regions that are rarely visited, to gather more data and hunt for other wrecks. On board the boat are conservationists, scientists and a marine archaeologist. Andy Ridley, the chief executive of Citizens of the Great Barrier Reef, the organisation that runs the survey, says last year's discovery was an unforgettable experience.
The first mate on the boat was floating over the top of a reef from one side to the other and noticed that there were river stones in the water And, you know, round stones on the top of a coral reef is unusual. I think, you know, we realized it was ballast from an old ship. We discovered one of what we think is three 200-year-old wrecks on that particular reef in the far northern end of the Great Barrier Reef. It's one of the most exciting things I've ever done in my entire life. It's like one of those kind of boyhood kind of dreams.
Scientists, tourists, divers and sailors are contributing to this year's Great Reef Census. They're taking thousands of pictures that will help document the health of a reef system that faces various threats, such as climate change, overfishing and pollution. The images will be analysed early next year by an international army of online volunteers who in the past have included children from Jakarta, Indonesia, a church group in Chicago and citizen scientists from Colombia. In 2020, its first year, the survey, which runs from early October to late December, collected 14,000 images. The Great Barrier Reef is a World Heritage Area. It stretches for 2,300 kilometres down northeastern Australia and is the size of Germany. It comprises 3,000 individual reefs, is home to 10% of the world's fish species, and is the only living thing visible from space. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Finally on VOA Asia, air pollution and car traffic are problems in many major cities throughout Asia and the world. African cities are no exception. So a ride-hailing company has introduced electric bicycle rentals for the first time in the capital of Kenya. Lenny Rivaga reports from Nairobi.
Kamal Budhabati and his team of technicians inspect the latest iteration of an electric bicycle dubbed e-bike. For the past year, Budhabati, chief executive officer at Little, the ride-hailing company behind the e-bike, has been perfecting the design and efficiency of the bicycles. When charged for 4 hours, they store enough electric charge for an entire day, giving cyclists an unlimited cycling range. Recently, the company had a soft launch to introduce the e-bikes to the public and gauge reaction. Budhabati says the inspiration behind this innovation was encouraging users to adopt green energy mobility.
I think, you see, the world is now recognizing that we need to change. And I think as a part of that, we feel that in whichever smaller way we can contribute to the effort that the world is making to make it a greener place, I think that's what we are doing.
The e-bikes cost about 50 cents for an hour. Access is granted by downloading the Little app on Google Play Store. Once this is done, a scanner on the app in conjunction with a client's mobile wallet unlocks the e-bike for a limited period. The e-bikes are also geo-locked, ready for the next user at defined collection points around the city. Kalua Green is the chairperson and founder of Green Africa Foundation, an organization that seeks to encourage sustainable environmental conservation in communities. Green says the move to embrace green energy mobility in the country, though timely, faces myriad hurdles.
The challenges vary from policy, the infrastructure, and also other activities like that are required by the government that have not been done. The need to have all this in place has not been done. Infrastructure, because our roads do not have in plan the accommodation of cyclists.
The United Nations Environment Programme in Kenya supports various initiatives encouraging adoption of green energy. Budhabati and his team at Little are planning a mass rollout of the electric bicycles early next year in a bid to reduce carbon footprints and encourage clients to adopt green energy mobility. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's all the time we have on VOA Asia. Make sure to find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Enjoy the day.